Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cubicle. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God of Heaven, we come now as a unit, a bunch of people in a room to talk about how we're going to get along, how we're going to make it, how we're going to love our neighbor. Right now, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for everything that's going on. And I want to keep the attitude of gratitude and try to help others. So with that said, I come to you graciously and humbly with minds, collective minds, who all are sporadic and beautiful and kind and passionate about living life, living a life that you have given. Therefore, thank you. You be blessed through us. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Say, man, what's happening? We're back. Street View Podcast,
it's good to see you guys. It's good to talk to everybody out there who listen. I want to thank you first and foremost for all of the feedback on the podcast. I mean, the spikes of people downloading it and people actually reaching out to me saying, I had a guy stop me in the street once, say, hey, yo, you're the guy that does the podcast. Yeah, how you doing? I'm okay, dude. I'm good. Good to see you. So I had people actually reach out in a positive way, and I just want to thank the whole Dallas. As a young man that's been nurtured and cultured by different individuals, learning from everybody I come into contact with, I'm grateful, extremely grateful. So today on the show, I got a couple of things going on. I got some real, real, real great minds here on the show. But before I do that, I want to kind of talk about where I came from and where we're going with the Street View Podcast, kind of give a little direction to this thing. So Dallas as a whole, the city of Dallas has become my home. And me being a man, I'm responsible for my home. I'm responsible for my setting. I'm responsible for the environment to which I live. So I have taken it upon myself to be responsible enough to speak out and use the word, the spoken word, the power of words to enact the change. I have taken that upon myself. I've also taken on too many roles. There is the role of the responsible adult. There's also the role of the activist. And one of the new words you guys will learn today, artivist. There's the role of so many different things that I've taken on. One of them is to be a respectful, responsible, autonomous man. Today we're going to talk about conformity and nonconformity, two different words. And I'm not a word. Well, I am a word person, but some people are not word people. Conformity, in my estimation, is when somebody is going to take up on a responsibility that is socially the norm. And then nonconformity is when you will make or pave your own way. A friend of mine up at the El Centro College told me, when the doorway is closed, then you break down the wall. And when you break that wall down, individuals will follow you. With that said, I want to introduce the individuals. Some of the individuals who have both followed and have led me. Today on the show, first off, I have my co-host. My co-host, the lovely, the one and only guest co-host for this show, Miss Corey.
Hello. It's good to be co-hosting today on the podcast with Rashad and friends. I'm inspired by the podcast movement, and I hope to be a part of, you know, this movement in our community.
Corey, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself? Where you from? What you into?
I'm from North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. I actually moved to Dallas about 3 years ago. by way of San Diego, which is originally where I moved to coming from North Carolina. When I got to Dallas, I was rooming with my sister, who I came to Dallas with from San Diego. And I lived in a transitional housing program. And right now, I've lived in different parts of Dallas, so not really stable, but making it. So
basically, you say you lived in different parts of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
The point of me having you on the show is that you've been in a lot of the different scenarios that we'll touch on today. I think it's inspirational to have somebody else, an outside voice here, outside of myself, because I mean, you know, I could talk forever, but I think having a co-host, having somebody who can interject and also provide feedback or perspectives will enhance our ability to change or to grow.
Absolutely.
So with that said, my co-host is going to chime in whenever she feels necessary, when she deems necessary. Also on the show today, I have the wonderful, lovely, talented artivist slash mother slash sponsor slash theater drama major, I have the one and only Miss Vanessa Taylor.
Vanessa Mercado Taylor.
Vanessa Mercado.
That's right.
Miss Taylor, would you introduce yourself a bit?
Sure. One of the slashes that you missed there is teacher.
Sorry.
Which is one of my jobs that I'm the most proud of. My name is Vanessa Mercado Taylor, and I'm the visiting scholar of drama and humanities at El Centro College. So my background is in theater, and the foundation of my work in theater is in social justice and human rights. So a lot of my training is in how to build community through theater, how to begin conversations about difficult issues, how to do capacity building through theater. And then I started teaching when I was in graduate school, and I very quickly realized that it was a passion of mine. I love working. I love a group setting. I'm not a person who's comfortable working individually. I'm more of a community person, you know. Right. So having students around all day and having people to bounce ideas off of, or you know, answer questions, ask questions. That's really where I feel happiest. So I found my way to El Centro College, and I was lucky enough to start working as an adjunct, and I immediately fell in love with the community at El Centro. I love the students. I think we have an incredible, incredible community. Very diverse. A lot of challenges, just like every other campus. You know, you have a lot of young people who are, trying to make it through school with a lot of difficulties. But we have such a vibrant group of young people, and you know, I'm constantly inspired every day by people like you, Rashad, you know, who are starting things and who are making things happen and who are reaching out and who are building community and who are doing these amazing things like podcasts and all kinds of other things. So that's what I do most days. I go into campus, I talk to a lot of young people, I teach theater, humanities, drama, film,
yeah,
all kinds of things. And then I'm also a professional artist. Yeah. I'm a producer and a director with Cara Mia Theater, which is one of our local Latino theater companies. And I also create my own work. And like you said, I'm a mother. I have a 2-year-old. so I'm busy, but I love what I do. So, and I'm very happy to be here. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. Mm-hmm. I'm so appreciative to have you. I know, you know, with all of those titles, I know you're busy.
I am, but it's really nice to be able to make time for things like this that I know are important. So thank you.
Last but not least is the one and only Mr. Nick Nicholas. Nick, you want to give your whole name? You want to talk just a tad bit?
Oh, just a little bit. My name is Nicholas Paul Kelly. I'm from Houston, but I'm a Dallas native now. I've been here for 4 years, been homeless for about a year. I am supposed to be telling the homeless perspective of things and the conversation, you know?
Maybe.
But I'm here basically to support my brother, Rashad, because I love what he's doing here. You know, he has a voice. He can change things. And, you know, I'm here to tell him how much I love him, you know, and how much I love what he's doing for us. You know, he is our voice. And not enough people, excuse me, like he told me the other day, like he wants to reach the homeless community, you know. But I asked him this question personally, you know, who in your audience do you think that you're actually reaching? You know what I mean? And he was like, well, I go out and tell people and stuff like that. But I mean, I asked him again, okay, who do you actually is listening to the show to make the changes, to get these, what is it called? The resources that you're giving away on your show, you know what I mean? And he couldn't really answer the question because, like, the people who do listen to the show are people who are, like, outside looking into the situation, you know? And that's nice because that's more resources pulling to the homeless community. But if that's what he wants, the homeless people to listen to this show, he has to like figure out a way to make it, what's the word I'm looking for, zoned towards his audience, you know,
okay,
and more accessible to us.
We're going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
Because I remember you and I had that conversation and it boiled down to belief.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You're right.
Can I make a comment on this? Because the conversation that you guys were having,
yeah.
I think this is very common in this kind of work that you have a lot of, I think calling them outsiders is totally appropriate. People who aren't really affected by the situation, but feel some sort of responsibility for some reason or have an attachment to the community, but that are helping from the outside.
Right.
And there's so many movements now that are talking about that the movement needs to really happen from the inside, right?
From
that
within.
We have.
Absolutely.
Like as an artist, we have a long tradition of artists stepping into neighborhoods as the sort of saviors, you know, bringers of culture. Let's transform.
Right.
We're going to help these people with our art.
Right.
Right. And we have a lot of that. We have a long, decades-long history of that happening. And hopefully now movements, we are starting to figure out that they only work when they start with the people who are actually involved. I mean, I'm a huge believer in participatory democracy. And
yes.
So the idea that you have to work for yourself, right? And,
yeah.
and work as a community for itself rather than anyone from the outside coming in. And
well, for me, what we talked about, me and Nick, we talked about belief. Because what happens is we talk all day about me being a foot soldier.
Hmm.
Because I'm actually in it. I'm in the war and I'm actually trying to climb the ranks to make sure that our soldiers, our troops are getting fed what they need to eat. And, you know, just actually trying to fight for us. And so what happens for us is we have to figure out how to get individuals who are in it to believe that they can make a difference. So that's the issue that I face, and that's what the podcast is about. So give us the time, and we will talk about it. We was talking about conformity, what it really, really means. And I want to kind of like give a story quick about what happens with conformity and nonconformists. Because like I said, I consider Nick, I consider you to be a nonconformist. Vanessa, I consider you to be a nonconformist. My co-host, I do not consider Corey to be a nonconformist. I consider her to be a conformist because she's pretty much, you know, just straight laced, the look of somebody that's well presented. Just looking at them, but then again, you never know a person's mind. And so that's what I had to learn in the scenario that I'm going to tell you guys. And I got locked up. And when I got locked up not too long ago, I went to a mental hospital. They sent me to a mental hospital saying, Rashad, you are not normal. So I began to ask them, well, what is normal so that I can meet and exceed your criteria of being normal? And they said, no, you're not normal. This is why you're in this mental hospital. And then I wind up teaching classes at a mental hospital. Nevertheless, one day, something in my mind, maybe boredom, made me look at the rules to which I signed for. When you go into a facility, they always make you sign some set of documents. So I looked at the documents, and the documents say, they stated that I could leave the premises whenever I felt. I was not being housed as a prisoner, but I was a patient, and it was a outpatient treatment. I could leave the facility. I could leave whenever I felt was in the rules. Now, the prison or penitentiary brought me there. So basically, the rules or the rights to which I signed over to allotted me the freedom that I wanted. Now, I didn't just choose to say, well, I'm going to walk out the door. No, I did what I wanted to do. Young black men like playing basketball. My uncle, shout out to the late, great Ronnie Charleston Sr., was a basketball phenom. I mean, he carried a Bible and a basketball everywhere he went. And basketball will save your life because of him. Like, he would get out and you'd say, well, this is a 50-year-old man. Anyway, back to the story. I'm at the hospital and I see the rules. So, and I want to play basketball. So I say, well, yo, you know, we've been going out there playing basketball. And the dorms are set up where they're open, and we're grabbing all the guys from different dorms going to one basketball court. They all have basketball courts. We go there, and they stopped it. They said, no, you guys have to have somebody with you to go out there. And this guy or that guy, not feeling like they want to bring us out there, is like, no. So I look at the rules, and I tell them about it. Yo, man, you know, what's going on? This is the rules right here. This is the rights I signed for. I'm going to play basketball. And I'm trying to convince other individuals to go with me to play basketball. And they're like, oh, you know, the people are telling them, nah, don't go. So they're conforming. They're taking up on that role to say, I'm going to follow this person's word of mouth as opposed to what is written documentation, which is something that I've signed for. In the same manner, individuals don't know some laws and some rules, Declaration of Independence or whatever you want to call it. Nevertheless, I go out, you know, they come back to me. The people come talking all nice. Come on, come inside, Rashad. Okay, I'll come for him. I go inside and I start talking to him, and I talk to him blatantly out loud. Listen, this is the rule. You guys need to read this. This says we can go outside when we please. No, you cannot. Those rules were made for another facility, and you have to follow our word. Okay, I'm going to follow your word. So I look deeper into the documentation, finding out only reason I would not be allowed to go out is if a doctor said I was not stable mental to go out. Otherwise, I still have this privilege. Long story short, me announcing this turned into me supposedly inciting a riot and being hugged by about 8 guys and being stuck with a needle because my decision to go outside and to tell other individuals that they had the right to go outside, it was frowned upon.
Informing people of their rights has often been seen as needing to be silence. Tackled by 8 guys and stopped.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, how does everybody else feel about that? Has anybody else had a situation of that similitude happen?
I got a blank, man. I can't say that was a really good story, but I was wondering where he was going with that there for a while. But I don't have a story like that, but I can think of many that have happened in American history, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, with anybody who reads you your rights and, you know, 8 people tackling you or whatnot. And it's that there to, like, I was gonna say, I don't see where the conformity or whatever, or you know, the base or what we were talking about is there, you know. And then, like, I figured it out at the end, I put it together. Like, I can't say I've ever done anything like that. You're a true leader, you know. And
but even in our local news, and I think I just saw in the Observer, like the cop watchers, you know, the group that goes out and is recording the cops to make sure that they don't violate any rights. In terms of, there's a local group of cop watchers that it's an organization. They put on their yellow vests and they go where the cops will be, and they take video to make sure that rights aren't being violated, that the cops are acting according to, you know, the rules that they should be following.
Wow.
And so right now, I think the conversation is, are they crossing the line or are the cops crossing the line? And this whole idea of informing people of their rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, what they say is we have a right to be here and record. You know, we're not doing anything wrong, but they're not conforming to this idea that if a cop says don't do it, you don't question it, right? It doesn't matter what the law actually is or what, like you were saying, but the rule's there. It says I can go outside. Right. That didn't matter. Right. It was that the people in charge, the people in power were, I don't know what the rules actually were, but right, they were either creating the rules that they wanted to, or they were right. Creating new rules, and everybody had to conform to that.
Well, me being who I am, I'm a troublemaker. So as long as there's a set of parameters, I'll operate within that set of parameters. But I will look for loopholes. I've always done that, even in school, which is something I kind of want to ask you guys about. Vanessa, for you, who are you in school? What type of person?
Who was I in school? I mean, I think like most teenagers, I was the one trying to conform. Well, like I think most people do try to conform, unfortunately. Like, I think we were talking during the break. It's easier, or it works, and nothing again. And I'm going to actually question Rashad on this label that you're placing on your co-host, Corey. Sorry, I just hit the mic. Of conforming or not conforming. Because I think we're very likely to look at someone and say, well, they look like they're not conforming, or they look like they're conforming. And fashion is one thing. What you wear is one thing, but how you live your life, what you do, your relationships, that's a whole nother thing.
Well, I'm picking on Corey because, I mean, me and Corey actually, I'll never forget this. After the going out to the Spanish, what was it? The thing we did over at the
show?
Latino Cultural Center.
Right, the play.
Corey took me on a wild adventure where she went all over Dallas and she's like, well, I used to do this when I was little. And it's like, I used to just take walks, and I'm like, Corey, where are we going? So, I mean, at heart, no, she's a nonconformist, and I think we all are. But I think I am making a misconception.
I don't know. I think at heart we're all nonconformists, but I think society sort of forces conformity on us, right? I talk about this in my class sometimes. I look at a male student, I say, why aren't you wearing a skirt? And usually we get to the point, well, because I'm not supposed to, because men don't wear skirts, right?
Okay.
And it's these, or like, I use this other example. Why do we have front lawns, like grass lawns? Who made that decision, and why do we all do it? There are a lot of things around us that happen that we never ask why, you know, or we take them sort of accepted, like because we're not supposed to, or because you're not supposed to. And in many ways, that's the way that a society works, you know?
I also disagree.
I'm confused about conformity.
What do you mean?
What is the definition of that? Because if you're not conforming, then you're considered a rebel. So my idea of a rebel is someone who breaks the rules. It's actually frowned upon to be breaking the rules. For a good reason, though, because you're breaking the rules. The rules are made for a reason.
Some rules are made for a reason. Nick?
I was going to say, like, most rules, you know, we are people, you know, and we do have an upbringing by your parents and your mother, you know, and those are the people who instill morals and ethic codes and whatnot and all this other fun stuff. And they're the ones that taught me everything I know, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't, you have people in your lives, guardians, teachers, you know, that teach you things that will bend you into who you are. And that's what I feel like we should have. You know, rules are nice and all, but, you know, sometimes they're unnecessary for certain people, you know? And that's how I feel about that.
And you're right. I mean, we all conform to who we were born to. You know, we learn from our parents how to behave or perhaps our faith or religion or just what food you eat or what kinds of, you know, we all conform to the world around us. I think the bigger question is, where is that line of asking, why am I conforming? Is there a purpose to my conformity? Is there something? Because obviously there is something, there's some level of conforming that is helpful to the people around us, to society, to our family, to whoever. But I think the question is, why am I conforming? And will me not conforming actually create a better situation than we are currently in?
I mean,
right? Is that nonconformity for a reason?
Yes, ma'am.
I guess.
I mean, for me, this is my thing. You're exactly in line with this guy I was reading about, named Earl Nightingale, who says conformity, his definition of it is acting like someone else without actually knowing why. That's conformity. Me personally, I feel like this. And I think I laced you up with this earlier, Nick, that everybody's equal in that they have the power of choice and the burden of consequence. I mean, if I'm homeless, then I got to deal with the elements. But if I'm housed, then I got to deal with bills.
Absolutely.
So I see both sides of that. So there's no, homeless people are such and such, such and such, because we could turn around and say, oh, well, house people are such and such, such and such. They're stressed out. They're not, you know, they're making the world horrible. You know, even me and Jasmine have a conversation all the time, like, who owns public space?
The public.
Supposed to be the public.
So, I mean, like, just right now, what just happened is they took the bridge, flipped it around, turned it from farmer's market, and now it's facing the highway.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, the people who used to lounge about the bridge by farmer's market are now pretty much lounging about the highway, and the police come. And I saw just the other day, you know, you come in and you wake somebody up. You're not going to sit down. If you're a policeman, you're not going to shake them. No, you're going to sit there and you're going to put your foot on them while they sleep. And that's not, you know, that's not cool.
And that goes back to, yeah, go ahead.
So what I think is, or not even what I think is, what is real is that we're all equal. And that's something we need to just go ahead and look towards, whether it be conforming or non-conforming. Since we're having a conversation, I just got a bunch of questions, and then I'm going to just throw it out there, and y'all just pick from them, whatever you want to pick. Just consider this a tree. You pick whatever kind of fruit you want to pick. So some of the questions I want to ask about hope. I want to ask about survival. I want to ask you, like, how important is it to your needs? I want to ask I want to go back to the question, first off, who were you in school? And I'd like to start with you, Vanessa. Finish. And then Nick, if you could, and co-host.
Oh, I conformed big time in high school.
Did you?
I mean, you know, as a teenager, I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be anything but what I was. And it comes from a lot of different things. It comes from being a first generation immigrant, ideas of the American dream that my parents sort of pushed on me and what my life was supposed to look like and what being an American is supposed to be. You know, growing up in a time, not that long ago, I'm not that old, but growing up in a time where I had no role models that looked like me on television. The only people I saw that looked like me were maids or criminals, you know, yeah. And things are changing, which is great. Not changed enough, but so I didn't want to be me. I wanted to be the sort of a typical American girl, which for me meant, being as white as possible and looking just like everybody, looking like all the white girls. That was my kind of conformity in high school. And it took me a long time to realize why I was conforming and then just to figure out who I actually was outside of all those messages that I had received and narratives that I had internalized and things I was supposed to be. Yeah. It took me until my late 20s, until I went to graduate school, until I left my city, left my friends, left my husband. I was already married and was alone for the first time. I was able to travel. I went to Europe. And so for the first time, I was also in an environment where I could ask questions in a learning environment, which was really about thinking and not just about preparing for the test and the correct answers.
Right.
So I was thinking for the first time and asking questions. And it took me until I was pretty much about 27 or 28. I think I was about 28 to really figure out who I was and say, I'm done trying to be everyone else. And this is me. And I'm not sure who I am, but this is me.
You know, I talked to my cousin not too long ago and he actually said the very same thing. And one of the questions I was going to ask is, when did you become an adult? But what you just described pretty much was that point.
I still don't see myself as an adult.
You don't?
No, it's hard. I mean, maybe it's because I'm in a creative field. Mm-hmm. I'm around young people a lot. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, I decided I don't want optimism to be something I did when I was young. I don't want this sort of young spirit that I am proud that I have to leave me. Yeah. So I'm 33 now. I have a 2.5-year-old. I think everyone else would consider me an adult.
Yeah.
But I don't consider myself an adult. I have a tendency to still kind of want to be playful and have fun. And I have a problem with connecting those things with not being an adult.
Okay.
So
Nick, same question. Who were you in school?
I was that kid who was real dirty, looked at everybody kind of funny because like, okay, I'm going to explain this to you. I had a plastic sister and a football brother. I'm sorry. And I did not like
a plastic sister and a football brother.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what
I'm
you
a
mean.
Barbie and Ken.
Thank you.
Okay.
Real pretty, you know, did what she had to do to get attention, you know, and all this. And I hated that with a passion, you know. And then my brother, on the other hand, you know, big muscular dude, didn't have to do much to talk to chicks, you know. Got anything he wanted, you know. He didn't even have to go to class. Coaches would go to class for him and be like, hey, he needs to play this game, you know. And I'd sit there. I could never get an opportunity like that if I wanted to, you know.
Right.
And my parents used to be like, just apply yourself to something, you know. And I do apply myself. I'm a musician, you know.
Right.
So I was in – so, like, that entire – like, I never really went to school, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All through high school, I was just kind of there when I wanted to be. And like, when I showed up, I wouldn't really pay attention. I didn't like anybody. I was real negative, you know. And that experience, it taught me not, you know, you can't just look at somebody and be like, that's who you are. You know what I mean? Cause that's closed-mindedness, you know, something I was supposed to be not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's exactly what I was being because, you know, I wouldn't give it the opportunity to show me something different, you know? And the way I feel about open-mindedness is you know what? Here I am. This is who I am. You give me who you are. You know what I mean?
You're great with that, bro.
And there is no judging and there's no judgment in this, in between this. It's just, that, you know what I mean? And
I present
that's very refreshing because it's so hard to find no judgment.
Yeah.
That to me, like, okay, just in a conversation with somebody that you meet, like, okay, just like, okay, look, you're talking to somebody, blah, 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 right? Hey, my name's Nick, you know, and they look at you and, you know, they give you that kind of look on your face, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And this, to me, I hate that because I won't do that to an individual in my life. You know, I don't have it in me, not anymore. You know, I used to be like, okay, well, dude, this is who you are, blah, 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 blah. Because I was raised by people who were very judgmental and very critical. And so, you know, I'm not going to sit there and like be, okay, this is who I want you to be. Because I don't, you know who I want you to be?
You.
Period. Mm-hmm. Why can't you just be yourself? Why do you want to portray an image that you see on a television or in music or in, why can't you just sit there, find an idea and think for yourself?
I'm so inspired by science. The fact that our bodies, just scientifically,
yes,
biologically, we are each, I mean, there is no other Nick, like just physically in terms of your brain, your memories, how your brain's put together. I get a lot of inspiration from the fact that physically we are actually very, very different.
Yeah.
All of us, and no one person is like any other. So why not our minds? Why not the kind of decisions that we make? You know, like Nick is saying, like, why do we have to conform to this?
Yes. That's the conformity.
If our bodies biologically do not conform, why should we absolutely in our minds?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I mean, I watched a motivational speech by Will Smith recently, and I got to give a shout out to Will because he said, I think all successful people are nonconformists. He says all of them. Anybody that's successful has that twinge of he's weird. He said, because for what was the norm, to walk into a room and flick on a set of lights was crazy. That was not sensible. But Edison had to have that weird thought. If I tell you I am going to fly you over this ocean in a bent piece of metal, that's not something you're ready to assess. But the Wright brothers continued in that logic. So you have to have a level of nonconformity.
I completely agree with that. I completely agree. Well, because you have to, in many ways, I think to succeed, you have to test limits, you know, and there has to be a level of fearlessness, which I think people who don't conform have that in varying degrees.
Yeah.
And talking about varying degrees, I wanted to say something about varying degrees because I think a lot of people will look at what I do, maybe even look at how I dress or what I look like, and assume that I might conform. And some people that I know say I conform, some people don't, because of the fact that I'm in the educational system, right? A very, very traditional system. Right. I teach, I'm a teacher.
You're an artist.
Also, yes, but I'm starting to consider myself more a teacher than anything else, which I'm shifting. We'll see where that goes. But
conforming.
And, you know, a lot of my more radical friends,
yes,
who are forming, you know, collectives and who are into anarchism they might say you are definitely conforming. You're contributing to the system. You're training people to contribute to the system. You know, you're conforming. When I first started teaching, I had bright pink hair.
Right.
I have some tattoos. I've got two facial piercings. I decided to let go of the pink hair. And that was a conscious decision. I knew I was going to be a college professor. I knew that the professors around me would make judgments on me. And I personally made the decision to change that about myself. I haven't taken out my piercings, and my tattoos show, because I do believe that that does not affect your mind or how I teach.
Right.
But I was going into a system knowing that in some level I would have to conform.
I agree with you. I completely agree. Cause like that was a choice that you made because of other outside sources that would have judged you and had something to do with your job. You know what I mean? Because like, I don't know how it works in college, but like, in high school, if a teacher was, you know, out there or whatever, they would be attacked. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And
even your moral character is attacked when you don't conform physically sometimes.
But your students love you.
I mean, yo.
Well, my students love me, but then
I'm not even one of your students. Like, you're my sponsor for the Spoken Word Club, and I love you to death,
Vanessa. Well, thank you, Rashad.
Only because, like, honestly, I've been to one of your classes, and the challenges you talk about, they're real, but you face them.
Mm.
They're real. You face them daily.
You know what it is? I didn't have a whole lot of good teachers until I was much, much older. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted good teachers. Like, I wanted mentorship. I wanted someone to answer these really difficult questions that I had when I was 18. And I had no idea what to do with my life. I had no idea what a career was. I had no idea about anything. I wanted that. And I never had that. You know, and coming from a very traditional educational background, I hope in some way to, you know, be able to help my students.
Well, one of the things about the conformity for me when I was young was that as far as teachers are concerned, I will never forget this as a young man. And as I grow older, my first grade teacher, and I ain't trying to get nobody in trouble or nothing, but my first grade teacher sat there in class with her pants unbuttoned and her hand in her pants, and we were reading. And it's not that she was trying to violate. Maybe she was just eight. She had just eaten or something. Mm-hmm. But I will never forget that. As far as conformity is concerned, she may have saw, you know, there was a personal preference. It was an individuality that she took to do that. But I won't forget it. As a first grade student, I won't. So Pretty much what I'm saying is we do have a responsibility to conform in certain things.
Right. And I think connecting it to your question about what makes you an adult, or when I felt like an adult, when I knew when I was conforming and when I knew when I wasn't and why, and when I was consciously making that decision, that did make me feel a lot more like an adult than anything else.
Yeah.
I think than any other action, even more than being a mother.
Wow. See, cause like, I'm sorry, cause I'm not an adult. I'm far from it. I don't pay any bills. I live off the government. I'm sorry, you know. But I mean, the way I look at it is what makes you an adult is you bite the bullet. You do what you know is responsible. You know, and as a mother, you probably did that already, you know. You're not gonna let your kid, you know, starve. You're not gonna let him go naked. Well, my parents did me, but, you know, they're hippie kids. And I mean, and you have to do what is right in the eyes of conformity, you know? So, I guess, like you were saying, when you realized that you know you had an idea of being an adult. But the way I look at it is when you do what you have to do because, you know, not because you want to, because you have to.
Yeah.
That's when you're an adult. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about it.
That's true.
On the issue of conformity, I want to give a statistic. This is in a book by a Mr. Rollo May, Man's Search for Himself. Out of 100 men at the age of 25, they start off with the idea from 25 to 65 that they'll be a success. And so they go forward. Out of that 100, one of them will become rich. Four of them will be financially independent. Five will be working, and 54 of them will be broke. Mm. That's crazy. We've asked everybody about who they were in high school, except my co-host. So, Corey, please, tell us who you were in school.
Who was I in high school? I actually consider myself a floater.
A floater?
Yes. In high school, I had people talk to me as if I were better than them, as if I was a part of the popular crowd. And then when I was with the, like, I didn't feel comfortable with the popular quote unquote crowd. We had these different cliques in school. I had a very cliquey school. You had, you know, like the emo kind of, yeah. And then you had just your regular, like, since I went to an art school, actually, so I'm just going to give it my own labels, not to say that they were, but like your R&B divas, and then you had, you know, your guys who were like the parallel of the R&B divas, but guys, you know, so, I mean, I was the floater, and I didn't really feel like I belonged in any group, so in a way, I kind of felt like that was non-conforming, but I also feel like people conform because, you know, they're not really sure of who they are. And, you know, I wasn't sure of who I was because I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. So who does that make me, you know?
Makes you you.
An yeah. individual.
Yeah.
An individual. And that goes right back to the same thing we talked about earlier about the definition of conformity from Mr. Earl Nightingale. Acting like someone else without actually asking why.
Does this take us back to a little bit to that conversation we were talking about an adult? I mean, do you guys think that point in your life when you realize
who you are?
I don't know that there's ever a...
There is for me. My father is incarcerated, and my father is a genius. My father got incarcerated and has 119 years for having hammers inside of a duffel bag in the French quarters in New Orleans. This is part of why Rashad does what he does. And he taught me psychology from inside of a penitentiary. That's how I know alternate options are available. My father was a father to me from inside of jail. And this is why I continue and persist in the way that I do. People will never understand that about me. My father taught me PAC, transactional analysis. I don't know if you've taken psychology classes. PAC stands for parent, adult, and child. And parent has the functions of a parent are to be nurturing and considerate and also to be enforceful of the rules. The role of an adult in his thesis or in his teachings is to give and to receive information. That's it. That's what an adult is from this standpoint. And this is also, he teaches this to individuals who are inside of the jail cells. He teaches this to individuals who come into jail. And the child, well, the child, you have the little joker, which is the one that tests the boundaries, which is the, look at Nick. Sorry for laughing so loud.
I know that guy.
Yeah, which is the individuals who test boundaries and parameters. But the crazy thing about it is we don't actually take heed that we all act in each one of these roles. They have
simultaneously.
You have been in roles where you had to be the enforcer of a certain rule. Listen, mm-hmm. man, you getting in my car, mm-hmm. don't have nothing on you. That's a parent. Mm-hmm. If we get stopped, this is what's going to happen. That's the adult. Now, if you got something, man, just let me know, man. So that's the child testing the boundaries. We all act in these different roles. My pop taught me this, and it hurts me, bro. It hurts me that I have to learn that from my father through pen and paper.
But you think you bring up a good point that it's fluid, right? It's not like all of you're a child and then you're an adult and you're never a child again, or that I think this is why when we're talking about, you know, who we are, I think who we are is always changing. It's not like you hit a point, you're like, well, I figured it out and now I'm done for the rest of my life, right? Like, this is who I am forever. Like, you're a different person every day you wake up.
It goes back to that body thing you were talking about, mm-hmm. how our bodies are made differently, mm-hmm. how we change. We're growing. We're maturing. My question was adult, because you have to ask yourself, have I reached that plateau where I'm secure in myself? Where the conformity is not just a conformity thing, it's an individuality. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I chose not to have pink hair anymore, mm-hmm. not because I was conforming, but because that was a personal decision. And mm-hmm. I think everybody has to have that moment where they make personal decisions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, for me personally, since the show's gone off, I've conformed a whole lot. Yeah, I have a car now. I'm trying to get. I got to worry about gas prices now. I have to worry about budgets. Well, and
there's various
now.
Levels of conforming. I mean, if you're not going to conform at all, like walk away from society, right? Like that's the ultimate sort of
that's
non-conforming. You walk away from all of it. And there's people who it's varying levels. You've got the super conformists,
right.
You know, and then you've got the super non-conformists, and then it's a gradient in between.
I'm still confused about this term conformity. Because it's like, I mean, visually, you can say someone's conforming to a certain group by the way they dress or something. Right. But
who knows if they're actually conforming, like, in their minds or in their behavior or... Right.
I mean, because people naturally gravitate to people who are like them.
Absolutely.
So they're not really conforming.
But what if you, like they said, okay, look here, you can look a certain way, but you can't think like that. So what if you figure out, I am not like these people, like you were saying, you were a floater? Like, what happens then? Then where do you go? Huh? What happens next?
What happens next? See, I've always been a philosophical one because I've been in deep thought.
Right on.
You know, that's been me. But Corey's still not getting a conformity. So an ultimate definition to conformity is acting in accord with prevailing social standards,
Who's the
attitudes, and practices.
So nonconformist is anyone who has a behavior or does something that most people would not agree should be done. Is that right?
So who's the nonconformist, the Republican or the Democrat?
Both are conformists.
Both of them. Because it's a party. Because look, the way I look at it, if you look at the American Constitution, I'm sorry y'all brought this up, I'm just going to spit this out real fast. Why do we have to be Republicans and why do we have to be Democrats? Why can't we just be Americans? We live in America. And if we disagree, you know what I mean? That's American, right? That's the freedom of speech. We have freedom of, ideas, whatever, thought, thank you. Yeah, so I mean, and the way I feel about it is, why do we have to put labels on things?
I mean, we live in a two-party system. Our country's a two-party system, but there's nothing that it says it has to be a two-party system, right? So, I mean, there's like the Socialist Party, there's Green Party, there's Libertarian, there's not just Republican and Democrat.
But if your values or your personality fits into a box, then that's not conforming. That can't be conforming, because who's the conformist? You can say the emo or the jock.
But see, we're working under an assumption that conforming is bad and non-conforming is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this conversation, most of society, mm-hmm. the conversation is conforming is good, non-conforming is bad.
Right.
My opinion is neither is neither.
You should
whatever.
Just figure out what works for you.
It depends on the situation. Okay. It depends on the individual. It depends on what we're talking about.
I think, and I love this. I think words are important for a specific reason, because they allow you to not only use wisdom, but they allow you to be able to go into different domains. They allow you to be able to see it from both sides. Mm-hmm. People, you have to use, if you're being, how people tell me, they tell me all the time is love yourself. If you're being smart or you're being wise, in a sense, you're not in the box. You're making personal decisions that are for the betterment of you. what am I saying? Okay, as far as non-conformity or conformity is concerned, if you're an individual and you're making decisions, then you're not a conformist.
But, okay, look here. And just in this non-conformity thing, okay, how many people before my time have had the same ideas that I have, done many more things than I have, and never went anywhere with those ideas? And then what happens to me if I want to be like these folks? That means I am conforming, right?
Yeah.
Because I want to be different. I want to make a change. I want to fight these. I want to fight the good fight and all this. In a way that a non-conformist are, in a way, conforming.
Yeah.
To something.
I was going
to
say that.
You know what I mean? So that, like, I don't know how to put it. There's really, it's a catch-22. Is that what they call those?
We talked about not leadership. We should have. But in essence, you're a leader. Every person on this planet is a leader individually. And you know what? What's crazy is you may not even recognize it, but when you leave your house, somebody is going to watch you and learn something from you. I have learned from every person I've come in contact with. Every person. So being a conformist or a nonconformist is basically you have to realize that you're a teacher, but not even by choice, which is why they do have rules. They have rules in place because there's a point in time where you have to be careful of how others are affected by your actions. Do you want to?
And that's where that's what I was going to say just now. Okay, look here. Just because, like you say, everybody's watching and you're a teacher, and even when you don't want to be, like, and this was in a movie. You ever watch The First Men in Black?
Yeah.
You know that little line that Tommy Lee Jones says to Will Smith on the bench? An individual is a beautiful mind, smart as could be, right? But you put a group of people together, what happens? What happens?
They make the wrong decision.
I don't agree with
they
that.
Are offended. Not no, that they make the wrong decision. They go along the majority.
Exactly, because they're like, hey, let's get along, let's fit in, whatever. And see, like it says, an individual is smart, people are stupid.
I got to get this. Yeah, that's what you said. I remember we had that conversation.
Exactly. Not if we learn how to be a group and to get better. Our society teaches individuality. The focus of Western culture, Western philosophy, and our country is individuality. We teach it, we learn it. It's in most parts of everything about our society. So to say we don't know how to be in a group, perhaps, I'm not saying that this is correct, but perhaps it's because we are never truly taught how to be in a group. I mean, if you look at a lot of different societies who work a lot more communally, they don't have this problem of the group having no mind or acting mindlessly and the individual having the mind. They can work as a collective. You know, and there's many examples throughout history of collectives actually functioning very well. And then there's also examples of it not working. So,
but I was going to say, yes, that you are absolutely right. But see, the way I look at it is if an individual, right, like you're saying, is smart, and then in a group we're dumb, why can't we be smart individuals in a group?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Why can't we have that collective mind?
That's pretty much what she's saying.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're hitting the key point of what makes a collective smart is that the individual still retain that.
And even if you do, I have the answer for this.
I'm not sure.
I have the answer for this. And even if you do find a bunch of individuals with a mindset that we're in this together for a specific purpose, you will find differences of opinion. And there lies the root of what must be controlled. The respect of another person's opinion, even though it is not your own. We jumped over this topic. We jumped over nonconformity and conformity. And I mean, my thing is this, like, what challenges do we face? Nick, you spoke about America. What challenges do we face, bro?
Each other. The way I feel about it is the biggest challenge that we have to deal with is another individual. Okay? The way I look at it is because, like you said, we're going to disagree. But see, the biggest thing is what do we agree on? You know? And that's how we get past these things. You know? And the way I feel about it is until you are willing, like you said, to step down and listen to the other side, and the other side is willing to do the same thing for you, you're not going to ever get anywhere. You know what I mean? You're just going to keep running. What did it say in another movie? You're going to, what is it? When an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, that's nothing. Nothing's going to happen, you know? So you have to be willing to give somewhere. So I guess in a way that is conformance. I mean,
what do you think, Vanessa, about the challenges we face as Americans?
I honestly think our greatest challenge is accepting information without asking why it exists. So I can't remember if it was in our break or before that we were talking about, gender roles and conforming or not conforming to gender roles. And, you know, I don't think that any one person is either right or wrong if they conform to a gender role or if they don't conform to a gender role. It's, do you know why that gender role is in place? Do you know why you are making that decision, or is that decision just being made because everyone else is making the exact same decision? So I think our greatest challenge, like what Nick was saying, is being able to talk about these differences, right, without judging each other, without trying to change each other's minds specifically, but listening to both sides of the conversation and understanding that these topics are much, much more complicated than we try to make them in even a 40-minute or however long podcast, right? Mm-hmm. This requires a lot of talking about it and discussing the history of it and learning about it. So I think being open to change, being open to thinking through information. I mean, I'm a teacher, so I'm always going to push critical thinking, right? Making the decision for yourself. At least knowing why you're making the decision. Doesn't matter what decision you make. Yes. Just knowing why you make it and why other people make it.
I disagree. I think there's something very simple we can do to change the challenges. The answer lies within us. Yes, I agree with Nick. And I do think we do need to talk about specific things and take time to do that. But I call this the law of opposites. The law of opposites is basically this, that if you're looking for a specific thing, you need to go to its opposite. If you want to know about freedom, you need to go to the prisoners.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want to know about rules, you need to go to the troublemakers. I really believe that. Because the reason I believe that is because I've seen it for myself. Mm-hmm. If I really, 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 really want to know about a specific thing, I can go to its opposite and learn everything I need to learn about that thing. One of the solutions that I found, and I'm probably the last guy you want to talk to, when you really, I'm the opposite guy of who you come to for the answers. I'm him. I'm the homeless guy who's doing this, that, and the third. And in biblically, there's a verse that says the wealth of the poor man is despised. That's why I have you on the show, Nick. Because you're a statesman. I remember having you at Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance meet. You're a statesman.
Yes.
So pretty much what I'm saying is this. The solution is this. And I've actually seen the solution for myself. There is an anger management book issued by SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health. It's an anger management book. That book needs to be taught to middle school kids. I saw it at this mental health facility. The book teaches about conflict resolution. It teaches about anger. It teaches us how to interact socially with other individuals and respect their viewpoints. And I encourage you to get it because it's free. It's free. You can actually call the number and get it for free. I encourage you to check it out. I think it's the 2007 edition. And it's a 12-week program to which you actually read it and you mark in it how angry you got. Some of the stigmas that we have about anger.
Okay.
Because people are aggressive. This goes with the law of opposites. People in their opinion to defend themselves are creating the greatest offense. I don't even know about the war on ISIS or whatever. I don't. But there's an offense that's being created from different nations because everybody wants to defend themselves. It's not smart. It's not wise. The opposite, the law of opposites. Man, I want to just stop what I'm doing and actually thank everybody individually for coming on the show. First and foremost, Nick, thank you.
Sorry I was late, bro.
Man, it's all good, man. You know, you came, you didn't conform, bro. You was here. Corey, please. Please, 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 please.
Corey, the most non-conforming one here today. No, seriously. Yeah, she's non-conform with all of our ideas. That's awesome.
That's good. That's good. She says, and she told me, I know everything doesn't need to be challenged. And, and so thank you for coming on the show, Corey.
Thank you.
Vanessa.
Mr. Rashad.
Oh, my goodness. Say your name again.
Vanessa Mercado Taylor.
Vanessa Mercado Taylor. Thank you
sort of.
For coming out. Thank you for welcome. Coming to the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
And I really want to thank the captain, man, because Jasmine told me, channel my inner Jasmine for this podcast. And man, without the captain, this would not be possible. Thanks, Ryan, for coming and hosting, man. I want to thank you guys, everybody who's listening. And let's go ahead and just pray this thing out. Most gracious and good God, you awesome. You dig? You true. I love you. And I'm grateful for everything that you've done, God. And I'm grateful for the opinions that are here in this room, God. And I'm grateful for the minds and the hearts and the souls and the passion that people have put together, God, to be conforming to what is love, what is humility, what is strength, what is power, what is courage, God. Giving us the ability to speak. And we're using it to develop strategies and also just to be, you know, talking about morals and values and ethics, things that really, really matter that we need at this time in our lives. So I pray in the name of Jesus Christ, God, that you be glorified and that everybody walks away with something from this conversation, whoever listens to it. I pray that prayer in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.